Let me ask, right now, has anybody else tuned in and like to check into the net?
KQDSL, David.
Good evening, David. Do you have any questions?
No, I'm good right now, thanks.
Come on, I need a question here. Anybody else wishing to check in?
Kilo Alpha 2, Bravo Delta Uniform, no question at this time.
Kilo Alpha 2, Bravo Delta Uniform, that's Mr. Helmut, and we would thank you very much for the check-in. Anybody else out there who would like to check in to this Barotechnet, or some similarity to Barotechnet, please come now with your call. Jim, are you capable of getting more power or a better location?
Let me work on the power thing here. I'll be right back.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim. NS2K also checked in. Anybody else wishing to check into the Barotechnet tonight? Somebody trying just before the ID. If you did make a try, I didn't copy you. Want to try again? Sorry, you're way down in the noise. I cannot pull your call sign out. If you've got more power or a better antenna location, come on back in a moment or two. Anybody else with check-ins who would like to, anybody else with comments, questions, or information who would like to check into the Barotechnet, please come now with your call. Okay, well, I guess we'll start our TechNet with just a socialized discussion here, a social discussion, and I have W2JEK Don checking in. Don, would you like to make a comment at all about some operating activities or what's been going on in your world?
All right, K2BAR and the net, this is W2JEK. I want to say good evening to everybody. Well, let's see, I've been playing around with W, of course, QRP, and was in the QRP contest recently in the QRP ARCI. That's one of the bigger QRP contests, and it 59 contacts there. Was also in a sprint with the North American QRP CW Club, had 12 contacts on that. And the other day on 20 meter CW with 5 watts, I worked at 9L1X, which is the expedition over in Sierra Leone, so that was a new country for me, so I'm going to have to send him a card. I did come up with a question, Tony, and don't know if you or somebody on the net can answer it. I know the Fox Hunt, I think it was Charlie and his wife, came in first on the Fox Hunt. Two questions. What type of antenna was he using and set up? And also, I know that, I think it was he was demonstrating some kind of a device with a wobbling tone on it that was to be through some of the transmitter. I was wondering if that device was on the air or was a voice transmission. So putting that back to that, maybe we can have a little action here, Tony. Back to you, W2JK.
Don, well, congratulations on your QRP contest and your contacts. That's great. And also Sierra Leone with 5 watts is a nice shot too. That's over in Africa. Haven't made an effort to try them yet, but I might do it one of these afternoons when I get a few free moments. Now, yes, Charlie and his wife Katie came in first in finding the fox. I don't know what kind of antenna they were using. I didn't get a chance to view what they were using, but we'll have to discuss that with them. We'll get their information at a later date. We did experiment with Charlie's wobbling tone for the fox, which worked pretty well, although I found it too short. It should have been longer. We had our technical problems because the location of the fox was not copyable from the Westwood High School. It was up in Ramsey, and as you can visualize, there's a large hill between Ramsey and Westwood. You know, that big hill that you drive down on Route 17 before you get to Lake Street. Well, they were on the other side of the hill, and even though they ran 50 watts with a J-pole antenna strung up the tree. Initially, we could not copy them. Now, the suggestion that came up with the repeater was to head north, and you eventually would pick them up. And with a clue that Jim worked at Ramsey Outdoor Stores, I headed to Ramsey and came close, but I didn't find them either. So if anybody else knows what they were using for a fox hunting antenna, I'd like to know. I didn't observe. Now let me throw a discussion open to anybody who might have information. Please come. This is K2BAR looking for information on Charlie's antenna.
N3CRT.
Well, that is a good source, N3CRT. How you doing, Charlie? Charlie, can you tell us your equipment that you were using on the fox hunt? Because I didn't see it.
Okay, first I'll talk about the transmitter, first of all. I built a kit called the Tiny Track, and it's basically a GPS encoder for APRS, and it'll... you know, it'll transmit your position regularly or irregularly based on like how fast you're going or if you make a turn when you input a GPS signal to it. But there's a modification for it. There's a different PIC chip, memory chip that you can plug in there. And basically you can program it to do random tones or whatever tones you want to do. And I had that set up for about a minute 45, and then I did an ID in Morse code. It was 73, this is K2BAR, Fox Hunt, and it was running 6 watts into a J-pole, a ribbon J-pole. Let me drop it here. Okay, and they were trying to call us on 50 watts of voice up there from Ramsey, but they didn't do too great with it. It was just the topography, I guess. And on my end, I borrowed Jim's HT, just an HT, and I have a three-element. It's half of the Aspero satellite antenna, and I had a probably, I think it goes up to like 120 dB. Yeah, that. Different step attenuators, and you can, you know, flick each one and take it in and out of the line. And by the time I took my last beam heading about half a mile away, I had 40 dB of attenuation in. So I really had to knock it down. And, you know, I also, and this is something I kind of want to focus on the next time we do it, I want to focus on having people have to walk and find it, and like it's not sticking out, you know, right as you can see it, kind of like it was the previous time where Gordon hit it behind the guardrail. But I have a way with a shielding of the HT with the new metal that just walking with the HT disconnected, and you hold it in like a tin box or whatever, you can get a null about 15 feet from the 6 watt HT. So that's something I'm going to focus on next time, and we might want to focus on a little bit at kit night. If anybody doesn't have attenuators, we can get a kit or, you know, scratch build one and see how that goes. So does anybody need any more information on how I did or what I was using? N3CRT.
Charlie, and let me review again. Charlie's basic equipment was his satellite arrow antenna, but only using the 2-meter version, about three-element satellite antenna with an attenuator that had at least 40 dB of gain. 40 dB of attenuation. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I've also found that you need at least 40 dB, not much more than 40 dB, to get good results. Anybody with questions or comments, and maybe I'll throw it first back to Don, because he initiated the question. Don, does that satisfy your inquiry?
Yeah, okay. That's fine with me on that. People were using Yagis, I guess, in most cases. At least Charlie was, and the attenuator. I guess that's the way a lot of those people seem to go. I mean, I built that other thing with the TDOA thing with the the timer chip in it, it puts a tone on the signal, and I think that would have been a difficult device to use in with the wobbly tone thing that he had hooked up to his transmitter. Anyway, it's good, interesting to hear this. Back to that. Thanks anyway, Charlie. Thanks a lot. W2JK.
Well, thank you very much, John. And again, for those people who might have not already been in contact with Barra, we did have nearly 20 people in the entire Fox Hunt. We had not necessarily 10 teams, but I had three guys with me, and other people had two or three fellows in each team. So, but we had a lot of fun. I also used mainly a Yagi to for location. I had a TDOA device that Noel had picked up, and I attempted to use that, and I was confused because you get four readings with TDOA. You get a front and back reading, and you get an end and end reading. So you have to determine direction beyond finding exact beam width. Direction with the Yagi is very important, and the Yagi with a simple Yagi with an attenuator, no active elements, works very well. Alrighty, anybody else with comments, questions, or information, would you please come now with your call sign?
KA2BDU, I have a question.
Oh, Mr. Allenwood, thank you. You have a question, please come now.
I wonder if anybody has experimented or may even have a receiver for low frequencies or very low frequencies. Over.
You're looking for frequencies below the broadcast band or below the ham bands?
Below the broadcast bands, like the use in the submarines, because right now I cannot communicate with my submarine to the other one, so I need a different radio equipment. Over.
Anybody fool around with VLF, very low frequency receivers of any type? There are frequencies down there with enormous antennas in length, and some of them are ground level antennas. I've heard about them. In fact, I had heard that there was a government station in the middle of our country that communicated with the submarines on very low frequencies, someplace out in North Dakota, from what I had heard. Don't know if that's true or what the details are. Anybody with information about this, please come now.
NS2K.
Signal, NS2K. Good evening, and do you have any information for us?
Yeah. Actually, I tried to visit one time. Of course, they wouldn't let us on the property. The 10 kilohertz transmitter at Cutler, Maine, right on the water near the eastern tip of the state, but it was absolutely, the antennas were absolutely spectacular to look at from, you know, the nearby hills, you know, gigantic towers with huge bundles of wire draping between the towers. This is all over seawater. But that's tiny in comparison. 10 kilohertz, needless to say, the baud rate is kind of slow. I understand they use some kind of a phase shift keying scheme. Pretty low baud rate, but again, I think they can receive it at well below the surface of the ocean. The other one, I don't know what frequency they're using, but it would be kind of helpful to, what is it, Wisconsin? Own the state of Wisconsin. An enormous antenna buried in that case. But, the lengths that they go through are just amazing. Back to net.
Okay, thank you, Jim. And again, Helmut, I don't think you could stretch out an antenna long enough to communicate with your submarine underwater. It would, you know, it would probably be several hundred feet long. And it would be
quite an enormous antenna to use with your radio control submarine. Over to you there, Helmut. Okay.
KA2BDU. Tony, you're absolutely right, but I wouldn't even make an attempt to transmit, but just to receive. But also, I heard they have some receiving antennas. Some of them are 3 miles long, and they attach to utility poles above, and the public is not even aware of it. So you're absolutely right. They do use long antennas. Back to net.
W2JK. Thank you, Helmut, for your comments. And yeah, I've heard very long antennas. Now we heard another call at W2JEK with probably quite information, I hope. Come on, Don.
Okay, over in Sweden, there is a town called Grimeton. I spell G-R-I-M-E-T-O-N. There is the last of about 26 Alexanderson alternator Morse code transmitters. These are right above the audio frequency range. This one is on 17.2 kilohertz, and they had run was built between 1922 and 1924. I'm reading out of an English QRP radio magazine here. The 200 millivolt transmitter consists of an AC generator, an alternator, but it, instead of generating 60 cycles like it would for power, it generates 17.2 kilohertz. The antenna consists of 6 127-meter high. I think of what 127-meter would be in feet. That's about 3 times that, right? Antenna tower, the 6 of them, placed in intervals of 380 meters, so that's, you know, like, what, 400 yards apart with 46-meter cross arms. That's, you know, that's, having 8 copper antenna wires. And they first started using it on December 1924. Now they still use, this radio station is still being used today. Excuse, let me drop it a minute. And this fellow wrote an article in this Sprat magazine on how to build a converter. Basically what he does, he has a wire that's about 15 meters long. And he has a converter that converts the, using a crystal, let's say a 12 megahertz crystal, but he says any high frequency is okay. And what they do is the output of that, you have a shortwave receiver tuned to, let's say, 12.17.2, 12.00017.2, so in other words, you'd be converting that low frequency up to a shortwave frequency and receiving with it via this converter. And it requires an oscillator, a crystal, of course, and it uses an SBL1 doubly balanced mixer connected back to front. So that's what's in this book here. And my father used to work on them, matter of fact, those type of transmitters up in Cape Cod, and I have a picture of a couple of them. So maybe that would be some interest to you, Helmut. Back to that, this is W2JK.
Hey, Don, very interesting that there's still something in use. I don't know, is it in use on a schedule basis, or is it a demonstration use type basis, you know?
I have a website, and yeah, we could pull that up. I think you just went to an SAQ. I'll have to try that while we're here. I have another friend, John K in 1H, who monitors the beacons in the 200 to 400 megahertz range. These are very slow speed CW beacons, and he's got a couple hundred of them. He uses an ICOM or 75 receiver, and I think he's got some fancy filtering, audio filters and whatnot to go with it. and I think he uses a loop antenna and whatnot for that. I mean, I don't know just what particular part of the low frequency spectrum Tom is interested in. But, you know, that only goes down, you know, that might only go down 100 kilohertz or 50 kilohertz. I don't know just how low that radio goes, but obviously it doesn't go down low enough to receive this VLF stuff that's down right above the audio frequency range. Back to that, W2JK.
Don, thank you very much. Oh, the big problem is we can build a converter that to convert it to a usable frequency that we have a receiver for, but where do we put the antenna? It's going to take quite a bit of wire to put an antenna up to get a significant signal. All right, enough information there, Bennett. The helmet, are you pleased with the response?
Absolutely. I know I have to look for a bigger house. Thank you, Tony. That's in it.
You have to buy the farm. That's what you need, not the house, the farm. Okie dokie. Anybody else with comments, questions, or information before I maybe pick on somebody? N3CRT. Charlie, go ahead.
Yeah, I have built a LF up converter. I haven't hooked it to anything yet, though. I found a kit on the internet. I think it was pretty cheap. I think it was like $12 or something like that. And I'll try to find it, and helmet, you can play with it and see how it works. See if you can hear anything. And I've done some limited receiving of beacons, and I can use an audio spectrogram program to really home in on those little Morse code signals that you were talking about there. And I've received, there's lots of stations out of Canada in the 300 kilohertz range that, you know, they're NDB, they're non-directional beacons for aircraft band, but they're pretty strong. The Canadian ones are a lot stronger than the U.S. ones. But you can receive U.S. ones too. There's a big list you can look up online, aircraft navigational beacons. So that's all I have. Back to the N3CRT.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Very good. I just want to take a quick break here. I don't know whether you guys get the Bergen record, but if you see the name Ed Slaughter, Ed Slaughter was a Boy Scout leader over in Bergenfield, a very good friend of Gordon Beatty. And he was away on his honeymoon. He's about 40 years old, away on his honeymoon, and he drowned in an, I don't know whether it was a swimming accident or a boating accident, but he drowned, and his funeral is this coming weekend. So Gordon is not here tonight. He's putting together some pictures that he's had of it through the years. Apparently they've been good friends. It's a serious loss for Gordon and his family. And everybody, if you see Gordon, express your condolences towards him. He's listed in the Bergen Record tonight, or yesterday's paper. Ed Slaughter. He is a licensed amateur radio operator. I think his call is KC2CN. No, I'm going to screw it up. KC2C something or other. He was licensed at the same time that Gordon's son was licensed. Very recent licensee. One of those Boy Scout troop leaders was involved with the testing. I'm sure that Jim knows him. Whether he knows about the story or not, I don't know. So please express your condolences to Gordon when you see him or hear him. Comments?
W2TTT, real quick, KC2NZD is in Delta.
Thank you. I couldn't come up with a call. KC2NZT. NZD. Delta. I guess he's licensed for about a year or so. Alrighty. Any other comments or questions?
Thanks, Johnny. W2TTT. Back to work. I'm copying pictures, that looks like.
And sorry to hear about your loss. It's a serious problem. NS2K. Jim. I think you may have bumped into Ed Slaughter. Is that a Roger?
Yeah, no, he was very active when a couple of years ago when we did the the training session with Gordon's troop. He was active with that, and he was one of the successful candidates, along with Gordon's son. And since then, there have been several other licenses coming out of that whole operation. Be nice to see more, anyway. maybe next time we'll have a little better success. But yeah, of course I had worked with him a little bit. And, yeah, really nice guy. Yeah, good heart, and very sad to see him pass away on his honeymoon. Oh my God. Anyway, not good at all. Anyway, don't need to go into it. But yeah, it is quite a loss. Back to Dennis Chukay.
Let me see if Ben at KO2 okay. Are you on frequency?
I'm here, Tony.
You have a moment, Bennett? Would you like to give us a brief dissertation on your very, very recent trip to Japan?
That's pretty boring without pictures, Tony. I'll give it a try. KO2, okay. It'll take about a minute. Let's see. Let's make sure there's no other traffic. Okay, this is KO2, okay. Well, Tony, as you know, I was at Kidnight the other night. I brought my laptop computer. I had some pictures. I went to Japan for almost a week. I worked for a Japanese electronics company, and they had a yearly mid-range planning meeting. So I arrived there Monday. Tuesday was meetings at the headquarters, and then an afternoon, and then Wednesday, more meetings. Thursday, I got to take a bullet train about 300 miles north of Tokyo. Took about an hour and 40 minutes, or an hour and a half. It goes maybe 170, 180 miles an hour outside of the city, and it was quite smooth, and that was pretty neat. I had some pictures of the bullet train. Got to eat lots of fish, lots of sushi. Fresh. They consider fresh sushi when they take a live fish. They kind of slice it and serve it. So as you're eating it, it's kind of still wiggling at the table as you're taking part of its body out and eating it. So that was a little bit unusual. Also, I ate what they consider fish head. That's, they just serve some kind of a sautéed head of a fish, and then you pick at it afterwards for the meat off the whatever parts you can eat. So that was kind of interesting. But also visited the big electronics district in Tokyo called Akihabara, and that had also some ham radio stores. The stores in this district were very small, only about maybe 8 or 10 feet wide, and about 4 feet deep, and they had their display cases. Let me let it drop for a second. In Akihabara, they have stores that were selling all kinds of parts. It's a kit builder's dream. I also had little stores that just focused on selling tubes, a lot of RCA and old U.S. tubes that they were getting hundreds of dollars for. I had some shots of that. And stores selling just transformers, like plate transformers, filament transformers. Other stores selling rolls of wire. So lots of different stuff, as well as, you know, completely built stuff, and they had just introduced in Japan the last week, 2 days before I was there, the new Sony PlayStation Portable, PSP 3000, so that was kind of neat. Very different looking. I guess it's going to be here, I don't know, end of the year or sometime next year. A sleeker unit, better screen, better graphics, and it already had a great screen. So let's see, what else? I don't know, visited a couple of factories, kind of neat. Nicest thing about Tokyo and Japan overall is that I've never seen a cleaner place. Not a speck of paper or garbage or anything anywhere. People seem to take great pride in maintaining the streets and all over. It was kind of interesting. So that's it in a snapshot, Tony. Back to net, KO2, okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And for those who have a visual picture of your description, I hope you enjoyed that. I was there many years ago, in the 1960s, and the interesting part about my trip was that one of the fellows who was traveling my group had been a bomber pilot, and we flew over the Tokyo train station, and he looked down and said, "Uh-oh, they rebuilt it." So I bombed it last time I was here. So it was, you know, 1940s was the bombing, and 1960s we were back on a tourist the trip to Japan. 20 years, it did a great job, and since 1960, I'm sure they've done even more fantastic work. Anybody with inquiries or questions for Bennett?
More, Tony. They were actually in the midst of a three-year project to renovate Tokyo Station. Still looked pretty good, but they were renovating it back to net.
There you go. I guess so you weren't pleased with the first construction, huh? Alrighty, well, we've run a net now for about 40 minutes or so, and I wondered if anybody else has comments, questions, or information, or shall we continue, or have we had it?
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB.
Good evening to you. Have a comment, question, or information? Come on back.
Yeah, Tony. I got a TNC today. I got it off the internet. It's a AEA PK-232-MXB. MBX, excuse me. And it seems pretty complete and everything, and all the books are there and the whole nine yards, with the exception I need a program to put into the computer, you know, so that when this thing hooks up, you know, it can display on the screen. And does anybody have any information on what might be the best one to use or the easiest one to use, but I'm fairly new to it, and where I might be able to arrange to get a copy of that software?
Try Hyper Terminal. It's in your start menu.
Hyper Terminal? Where is that, on the computer?
Yeah, Hyper Terminal. You just connect the PNC with a terminal mode, and you can use the commands in the book that way.
All right, I'll try that. I'll look at it tonight to see if, you know, what do I do, just go to, like, search and go to Hyper Terminal or something?
Yep, it should be on your computer, start, programs, and communications. There's, the program is in there.
Be under start, programs, accessories, communications.
Thanks, David.
Okay, I'll try that. Thanks a lot.
There's some setup required for that. I don't think it's too intuitive.
Have you explored the internet at all? There might be something that is developed exactly for the PK-232. Slightly different than the basic one that you're talking about. The hyperterminal is a very basic communicating terminal. It works. But I remember there were, I guess you'd call them, operating disks that came with some of the equipment. But I can't remember what they were at this time. It's many years since I've used it. So check the internet under PK-232 term programs, and maybe something will pop up. Over.
Okay, thanks a lot. You know, first we've got to convert some of the cables, because all the equipment I have is Yazoo, and the terminals, the cables that came with it, probably for like Kenwood or something like that. So I ordered the cable, the CT-39. It fits three of the four Yazoo radios I have. So it should be here by Monday, hopefully then. Tuesday night I'll be at Kit Night cutting the cables in half and splicing them the Yazoo cables onto what came with this TNC, and we'll go from there.
Very good. Well, again, many of us used it years ago. Has not been used by me for quite some time, and I probably have a PK-232 terminal around here someplace so I can find it. And I'm sure Jim Joyce has got one in his garage. Hi. All right, any other comments, questions, or information for the net?
2JEK.
Don, W2JEK, go ahead.
Okay, I'm reading. Sorry, I hit the wrong button there. I'm reading an article on this VLF converter about the station in Sweden, the VLF station. There is a website, and it's got a good picture of the building and the antenna towers. I'll give you that. It's www.alexander.nlikenovember.se, like Sierra Echo, fraction bar. I'll say that again. It's www.alexander, I spell Alpha Lima Echo X-ray Alpha November Delta Echo Romeo dot November dot Sierra Echo fraction bar. And they have and they get on the home page and you click on the radio station and they have a picture of the transmitter building and the towers and more information. And I think at 07:30 today, October 24th, they're having a transmission at that time on 17.2. So if you have a converter, you want to stay up for that hour. You might want to, let's say, 4 hours, that'd be about 3 o'clock in the morning, I guess here, who knows. Anyway, back to that. W2JK.
17.2 kilocycles? That'll kind of rattle the fillings in your teeth, won't it?
Tell you something, Tony. My father worked on one down in it was in the Soundbrook, but they called it the Brunswick. And I remember driving past the thing when I was a kid, and you go for a couple of miles, and you'd see these antenna towers, and there'd be a wire going to the next one, and to the next one, and the next one. And finally, we got to where the transmitter was. And my father worked at that place. I never went in there at all, but. He told me one day he had parked his car near a building that they used with had a loading coil in it. It seems when they were transmitting the loading coil, because he was too close to that loading coil when they were transmitting, and when he went off duty, he couldn't touch his car because it was hot with RF. They had to call into New York City, which was controlling the king of the transmitter, asked him to stop for a couple minutes so my father could move his car because it was hot with RF. They run real high power, not QRP, that's for sure.
Yep, I bet you light up all the fluorescent lights in the area. Okay, thank you very much, Don. And anybody else with questions, comments, or information for our net here tonight? This is K2BAR.
N3CRT.
Charlie, good evening. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on the west shore of Pohpakong here, so I might not make it so good. But if you want to look up an interesting article, look up Scotch tape and X-rays. Scotch tape and X-rays, and there's just an interesting news article that just came out on it. So just like to pass that along. N3CRT.
Scotch tape X-rays, right? Like the X-rays that dentists use?
Yes, they found that when you unstick scotch tape from things, you peel it off of things, it releases very tiny amounts of X-rays. So look it up. It's kind of interesting.
Beautiful. Okay. Alrighty. There you go. Some valuable information for your exploration. Anybody else with comments, questions, or information for us tonight?
MS2K.
S2K, good evening again, and what you got?
I was just looking over an article here, global on globalsecurity.org. They have a thing on the Cutler site. There are like 26 1,000-foot towers strewn over about 2,000 acres, and they're saying they run 50 baud. Very slow scan, slow speed data, and about 2 million watts. yeah, talk about lighting up some fluorescent lights. But what was the other thing? Between 14 and 60 kilohertz is what this site is saying. Now I remember them somewhere hearing 10 kilohertz, but this one says 14 to 60. And yes, kilohertz. needless to say, yeah, massive antenna. It's strewn over like 3 miles, many small plots of land apparently, strewn over about 3 miles of coast. So anything like this, amazing
I can certainly go for the problem touching the car. You have to almost ask them to drop the carrier for a second so you could touch the darn thing. Anyway, I guess I don't know. We're getting close to the end here. Back to net, NS2K.
I heard that they had dog whistles that are a little above the hearing range of men. Most human beings can hear about 15 KC. The dog whistles are higher. And I wonder what happens to the dogs in the neighborhood when these things transmit, if they can hear it. Anyway, just a comment. May I point out, Jim, and to others listening, that this weekend on Sunday morning there is a ham fest out at Limark. That's in Levittown or Long Island. Oh, I think it's Levittown. It's the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Association. Hamfest starts at 9 o'clock. It's an indoor hamfest, so you don't have to freeze your butt off. Problem that I see is that they're talking about heavy rain coming in on Saturday afternoon and evening and extending into Sunday morning. It'll cut down a bit on the volume of people that show up, but it's totally inside Hamfest in a facility there that is a large gymnasium. Anybody interested to go, you might want to consider Sunday morning drive to across the bridges to New York. And Jim and S2K, I don't know if you have any thoughts about it. I don't have to go, but if you needed a co-pilot, I would go with you. First back to NS2K. Any thoughts, Jim?
Well, I am kind of tempted to head out there. Depending upon how bad the weather is, I could also be tempted to head on out to the boats. I haven't visited it in a long time. Probably needs a little TLC, a lot of TLC actually. But, if the weather's not going to be hot, so hot, just go out to the thing and, it is, it's all inside that, the town hall, community building, whatever it is. Weather is not that much of an issue except for the driving part. Anyway, so it's a very good possibility. NS2K.
Okay, well, Jim, keep me informed on what your decision is. I'm glad to share the expenses and be a co-pilot. All right, guys, we're approaching the 10 o'clock hour, and I want to get the kiddies tucked in here and a cup of tea with the wife. And I wish all you guys to have a very good evening. Thank you for cooperating with me with my bit of wilds I've run on that, but I think we got through it okay. And we'll look forward to seeing you guys probably the next Monday night. Net will be with Jim at 9 o'clock at the 28.350. That's the next Barra 10-meter net. And, of course, there will be a kid night coming up on Tuesday night, and on with the nets the rest of the week. So K2 AMI, the net control, is going to make an effort to close the net right now and say thank you to all those who did check in, and we'll send a report on to our beam counter. K2 VAR is also wishing to thank the Bergen County FM Association and W2IP, the Tilting Advisor, who did a great job at restoring the 7.9 repeater back to its good health again. Seems to be working fine. He found some defective connections between the cables. Some of the cables had become tarnished or corroded, and he replaced some cables and some connections. There was no actual electronic breakdown in the equipment. It was a cable connection and a cable deterioration problem that occurred. But everything's back to normal, and hopefully the repeater will continue for many more years of good service. So we now thank the Bergen County FM Association and close the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net and say goodnight to all.